the host of Out There here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care. And yes, it is Friday. Friday, May 8th. 15th? 8th? 8th. I think it's the 8th. Today's Friday, May 8th. It's Spring Fun to Drive here at Valley Free Radio, as you just heard from the PSA that just played. And thank you to people who've donated. Our goal is $5,000 this spring, and we're on our way. What the goal? The fun drive started Sunday. Today's Friday. We got a little bit further to go to reach that. So if you're able to contribute to this community resource, the easiest way for many people might be online, valleyfreeradio.org/donate. Or you can always give me money when you see me out in the street. Oh, I'm Ruthie, host of Out There. I was in Kentucky for the last little while, three and a half weeks, and got back actually this morning. So for today's show, I'm going to talk about my trip, and I have some clips from there. What kind of clips do I have? I have some. I've got Heather from Grow Home in Baltimore, who I randomly ran into yesterday planting trees. I have Carmencita, one of my in-laws from Kentucky, telling a joke. I've got someone from a vigil in New York City on my way there, a vigil to call for the release of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. I have a little interview clip from someone at a Women in Black vigil Wednesday in Knoxville, Tennessee. Also for to stop the genocide in Palestine. And I have some rants. Oh yeah, what was my rant today? I was coming by the high school, Northampton High School, on my way here, coming from Cairns for Cancer, and like there were so many cars. And you know what really frustrates me? Like able-bodied people putting themselves in boxes on wheels, and everybody's got some reason why they do what they do, but gas is $4.50 a gallon. And I don't really know why so many people are still driving around Northampton for local trips. I saw a book in a bookstore, in a free bookstore, and wherever it was. Yeah, this was at the Knoxville Library, actually. Doesn't matter where it was. Okay, but the name of the book, it was Biology, spelled B-U-Y, Biology. And I was like, ooh, oh yeah, this is a situation we're in. And so I read a little bit of it, but it was written by an advertising exec, I think, as advice for how to control people's minds and control their biology. I chose the book by Marion White Wright Edelman. Marion Wright Edelman. Yes, I chose the book by her instead to accompany me on the bus back from Knoxville, called "The Sea Is So Wide and My Boat Is So Small." I might read an inspirational quote or two out of there today. We'll see. But for the rest of today's show, stories from my last few days. Okay, yeah, so I left Knoxville Wednesday. Tuesday's excitement. Tuesday was my last day in Kentucky at my family's place with my dad, who's 90, and my brother, I'm 52, he's 57, and my brother's wife, and my brother's wife's dad, and his wife. Monday. The days blur. Monday, I guess my sister-in-law's dad had a stroke and got taken by the Frakes Volunteer Fire Department ambulance to a place where he got medevaced by a helicopter to UT Knoxville. It was his fourth stroke. He wasn't doing well before the stroke, and well, he's doing better now than he was when he had the stroke. And so that was Monday. Tuesday, So my brother, Chris, raises some bees. He's got a beehive. Anyone who raises bees or knows about bees knows they can be a little tricky, and your hives are precious. And he had told me earlier in my stay, a couple weeks ago, hey, Ruthie, since you're going to be around the house and I'm going to be gone at work every day from 6 o'clock to 4:30, hey, the bees, I think they're going to swarm soon. If you see the bees swarming, see if you can capture them. I'm like, Chris, what do you mean, just like capture them? Run around with a net? What? I don't know. How am I supposed to? And so he talked me through it a little bit, and I was like, okay, I'll keep an eye out. And that was a couple of weeks ago. And then Tuesday, my last day in Kentucky, I was trying to wrap up all the garden things, finished planting the garden for my dad, which he won't be able to go out into because he's got balance issues. And I was trying to, you know, make sure I took out the trash because no one's going to take out the trash till I come back in 6 weeks for him, and like, trying to, you know, do all these things. And I was going down to the bamboo patch along the creek to get some bamboo for bean poles for the pole beans. And on my way down there, I stopped because there was a flower bush with a bunch of dead branches. And I was like, oh, I got my saw. Let me go ahead and cut off these dead branches. So I'm cutting these dead branches off. And then I'm like, it sounds like the bees are really buzzing. They must be all into this buttercup. And I'm looking at the buttercup at my feet, all blooming, big, bright yellow, little bright yellow. But I didn't see any bees. I sure did hear bees. And then I heard more bees. I was like, there's a lot. Where are they? They got to be somewhere around here. And I was looking. And then I saw up in the chestnut tree about 30 yards away. Ooh, there was like bees buzzing here and there and flying left, right, up, down, round and round in circles. I didn't know where they were flying, but there was a lot of bees and they were making a lot of noise. And then I realized that it looked like they were starting to settle in on a branch about 25 feet up. And so I went over there and I watched. They weren't interested in me. They were interested in their project, their queenly project, protecting the queen. And I watched and I saw they were starting to settle in. I was like, okay, Chris said, when this happens, you got to act quick. So I thought, it's 25 feet up in the air. I don't know what I'm going to do about a mass of swarming bees hanging out in a branch 25 feet up. But I mean, I'll act like I'm going to accomplish something here. Let me at least, I don't know, I guess I'll go up to the house and get the bee suit. Maybe I'll get a ladder. So I texted my brother and said, hey, the bees are swarming on the chestnut tree. And then I went up. By the time I got 100 yards up to my dad's house and got the bee suit, got the ladder, and came back down to the chestnut tree, the noisy swarm, it was all quiet. And they were in this upside-down triangle, pyramid-shaped mass just hanging onto the underside of this branch, just like crawling in the big hangy mound. And I thought, oh, lucky me. A few minutes later, and I never would have even noticed. But the right place at the right time. That's what they say about catching a swarm. It's a lot about luck and using your powers of observation. So then then what do you think I did? I looked online, of course. I don't know how to do this. I guess I'll look online. So I looked online, and they said, get a tall pole, like an extension pole or something, and tie a bucket to the top of it. And then use that pole with a bucket tied at the top of it to whack the swarm right into your bucket. And I thought, okay, I might as well try. Nothing to lose. And so I went to the bamboo patch and cut a 25 or 30 foot tall piece of bamboo. And I brought it back and I tied a bucket to it. And by the time you got a 5-gallon bucket tied to the top of a 25 foot piece of bamboo, it gets a little unstable. And I really didn't want to accidentally knock the hive off with a bucket at the top of my bamboo pole. So it took multiple tries of like planting the base of the bamboo pole in the ground and pivoting it slowly up with the bucket and trying to figure out, is it the right height? Is it too tall? This chestnut tree had lots of dead branches and stray branches and lots of branches for my pole and bucket to get caught in too. Anyway, so I did this multiple times till I got the height just right. My neck was starting to get a little bit of a crick in it from looking up above my head. So then I finally got the pole the right length. I got the bucket in the right position. So and then I put the base of the pole in the ground and lifted, pivoted it up. And I got the pole so that it would tap the branch, like kind of right above the swarming mass. And the bucket was hanging out right below it. And I took the pole and I oomphed it. I'll give that branch a little bit of a whack. But when you got a 25-foot tall piece of bamboo that's maybe 3 or 4 inches around at the bottom and 1 inch big by the time you get to the top, it just kind of went boop, boop, a little springy. And the bamboo didn't really give that branch much of a ding. And meanwhile, the 5-gallon bucket went woo, woo, big swingy and a big swingy arch flip-flopping everywhere. It did not knock the swarm off, but I realized, okay, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. Okay, I tried this. Let's think about what to do next. So I took down the pole and the bucket, and I thought, well, let me take the ladder and climb up the tree. So I put the ladder on the tree, and I climbed up to that branch about 25 feet up, and I looked at those bees. Their swarming mass, and I was just, I don't know, it was amazing. So I hung out with the bees for a while and watched them do their thing. And then I thought, well, I guess I could get a smaller piece of bamboo, like 5 foot long. I was only about 5 feet away from the swarm on the branch at this point. And I thought, well, or maybe I could just like whack from up here, bring the bucket up with me and then whack the branch and they'll fall into my bucket and I'll have it right here. And then climb down the tree with a 5-gallon bucket of bees in my hand. I don't think so. I thought, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I'll just enjoy the bees. And they're so docile at this time. Like I wasn't wearing a bee suit for any of this. I had grabbed the bee suit just because I didn't know. I don't know. Don't have that much experience with bees, but when they're swarming, my brother says they got one thing on their mind, and that's protecting the queen. And swarming around her as they try to figure out where their next permanent home is going to be. So then I came back down the tree, and I thought, you know, this is a two-person job. So my brother, he got home from work a couple hours later. Oh, he was very excited when I texted him. Oh, he was so excited to come home from work. And he parked the car and went like running into the basement to get some. He actually got a saw, an electric saw. We'll leave that aside. But so he got home. We went back down to the chestnut tree. He got the bucket on the bamboo, and I climbed back up the tree, and he held it in just the right place under that hive, and I walked out on the branch and stomp, gave it a stomp, and like two-thirds or three-quarters of the hive, that swirling mass of movement plopped into the bucket, and he lowered it. He had a bee box down below that he had been hoping the bees, the new swarm, would go to all along, but he had brought that over to the chestnut tree. So he dumped the bucket pile of bees into that bee box, and the bees sort of filtered down through some of the sleeves, trays. I don't know what you call them. Honeycomb trays. I forget what you call them. Slats. And then we're like, oh yeah, look at us. We think we just got a hive. We just captured a hive. And then we're looking at the branch up there, and it's like, there's an awful lot of bees still up on that branch. And he's like, oh, they'll come down. They'll come down once they know where the queen is. But then we thought, well, I don't know. Let's just to be sure, let's do it again. So then we did it again. He held the bucket up there on the bamboo, and I walked out on the branch, stomp, and like 3/4 of the swarm of the mass of bees that was there fell in the bucket again. And he lowered it and poured that back into the bee box. And we're like, and then we're really congratulating ourselves. Yeah, look at us. Oh, look at us. And then, yeah, human beings. Trying to take over the world, take over nature. Anyway, then, well, eventually we were like, well, that branch is half dead anyway. There's still a bunch of bees up there. I think because the queen had left her pheromones up there because she had been up there. And so she still had a lot of pheromones up there. And And that's what they were hanging out next to. And then, so then we decided to cut the branch. So then I climbed back up the tree with a rope. It was a branch maybe three or four inches in diameter, 3.5 inches in diameter. So then Chris held the rope down below, and I cut the branch, and we slowly lowered it. Then we set the branch on top of the bee box. And they didn't really go into the bee box till Chris got his brush and brushed them off into the bee box. Anyway, by the time we went to bed that evening, there was no bees left on the branch, and I think he had another hive. It was exciting. It was my first time. I'd heard about this phenomenon of nature, and I'd heard people tell tales of it, but it was my first time actually witnessing and experiencing it. It was exciting. Okay, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. This week is Fun to Drive. Today is the next to last day of Fun to Drive. And we love when people donate to Valley Free Radio. It's a community resource. People like me, we volunteer. Because you don't think someone would pay me to do a show like this, right? So we are happy for your money. We give our money too. So we can do things like replace our soundboard. Sometimes the mics don't always work when they're supposed to and things like that. Usually it's user error in my case. But yes, so please support this community radio station. You can go online, valleyfreeradio.org/donate. If you've been thinking about donating all week, but trying to figure out, now which show do I want to donate during and say that I really like it? Well, you can donate during this show right now, whether you really like it or not. And if you like a different show better during the week, you can still donate during my show and say, actually, this show is for Warm Heart of Africa. That's the show I really like, which Warm Heart of Africa airs Wednesday evenings. That's one of my favorite shows. Go to valleyfreeradio.org. Do you know how many programmers there are at Valley Free Radio? Volunteer programmers. I'll save that for the next pitch break. Now, will I play my first clip? Sure. I'll play Carmencita, since I was talking about Kentucky stuff. This is Carmencita. She is my brother Chris's wife's dad's wife. My brother Chris's wife, Jacqueline's stepmom. Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. Let's see. How do I do this? I got to get my volumes up. Okay, it's coming. I think it's coming. Yes. As I said, it's usually operator error when it comes to me and Valley Free Radio things. So let me let me do this again. Coming. Ghost lighter.
So I was coming into the garden and I tripped over the fence and kind of stumbled on the way down. And Jacqueline and Carmencita, Jacqueline was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "That's how I roll." And Jacqueline and Carmencita, when they saw I was okay, they were laughing. And they said, "Ah, that reminds us of a joke. ¿Qué es el chiste?"
El chiste es de un jinete que iba en su caballo. Iba muy feliz él en su caballo, peregué en el caballo. Cuando el caballo se asustó por algo y ¡pum! Que bota al jinete, cae al suelo y dice, "Ya que me bajé, voy a orinar." Dice el jinete.
Gracias.
All right, so the joke was, there's this jinete. I'm not sure what a jinete is. Man, gentleman, maybe something like that. Galloping on his horse. And the horse, like, stumbled and it threw the man. And he fell on the ground and he stood up and he said, "Well, as long as I'm on the ground, I might as well take a piss."
Ya que me bajé, voy a orinar. Ese es el chiste.
¿Y qué estás haciendo en este momento, Carmencita?
Ahorita estoy sembrando maíz, un maíz negrito, porque hice la primera siembra y parece que vino un pajarito a comer y de 4 granos solo me salió una milpita, entonces estoy poniendo otros 3 granos más. Ese es el trabajo que estoy haciendo ahorita.
So I asked her what she was doing in that moment in the garden that we were talking, and she said, "Well, I planted corn, like field corn, and I planted them in quadrants, like 4 to a quadrant, and only one, in some cases, only one survived. I think a little bird or something may have eaten the other three, so I'm replanting." Now, I'm the one that told her to replant, but my brother Chris said, "Well, if depends if you replant corn, then it's not going to all cross-pollinate at the same time, and then some's going to be bigger than others, and the big stuff will shade off the small stuff, and the small stuff won't be robust and won't actually make ears big enough to do anything with, and it'll just take away from the bigger ones." Well, so that was bad advice from me, I guess, to tell Carmencita to replant. All right, next on out there, it's time for a song, and I'll say this song in the context of talking about Kentucky things. So I was in Kentucky last Saturday. That would have been the 2nd of May, which is also known as Derby Day in Kentucky, when the Kentucky Derby happens. And my dad gets the Louisville paper, so he was the Louisville and the Kentucky Derby happens in Louisville at Churchill Downs. And so the Louisville paper was playing up because it's a big economic thing for the city of Louisville, Kentucky, and a lot of the horse races that happened during that Derby week. And this year at the Kentucky Derby, the winner, Golden Tempo, won the race at odds of 23-1, and Cherie DeVoe made history as the first female trainer to win the Kentucky Derby with Golden Tempo. Yep, many were surprised in the racing world when Golden Tempo won at odds of 23-1. So that was Saturday that happened. And Saturday night, I was listening to the local radio station, and they played.
Once upon a time, there was a princess waiting for a boy to give. Pack a shoe, suck it in, be a wife in a blue dress. The prettiest piece of property the land ever knew. She waited and she waited for the guy to show, but she didn't know that after busy in her stepsister's bed. So Cinderella said, plot twist. Be the reason for you to address me while you're on your knees in the scary event that I get too emotional during your trial, so watch how you're speaking, cause while you were sleeping around every weekend and using your power to prey on the weakest, I studied your own legislation all season, and last I checked, cheating is treason.
I don't need no prince to save me, I'm a goddamn C-E-O.
That's Jax. On the radio station in Kentucky, they didn't play the words. Well, there are a couple words they didn't play on the radio station, including God damn, because that's a Bible Belt. They just bleeped that word, I think. You're listening to Out There. Next on Out There. Let's see. So I did Monday, did Tuesday in Kentucky. Wednesday, I went to Knoxville. Oh, yes. So Wednesday, my trip to Knoxville, my nephew, Johannan, he works in Middlesbrough, Kentucky, which is about 20 miles over the mountain, southeast of where my family lives. And that's like the first step to get to Knoxville. So he gave me a ride to work. And he works at the community college in Middlesbrough, southeast Kentucky Technical and Community College, something, something. So last year, I think it was September, October, I went to, Johannan gave me a ride to Middlesbrough. I was on my way to Knoxville to come back to Massachusetts from one of my Kentucky trips. And when he gave me the ride into work, I had about an hour before my next leg of the journey was leaving. And I was walking around campus of Southeast, and I was noticing the trees. Lots of trees lining the sidewalks and the roadways, lots of planted trees, anywhere from 4 inches in diameter to 14 inches in diameter of all kind, well, of multiple kinds, oak trees and maybe some ash trees, maybe, I'm not sure, crabapple trees, things like that. And I noticed that many, many, many of these trees had volcano mulching around the trunks. Some pretty darn deep and steep, like, I don't know, 14 inches up on the trunk, I would say. And big, big, steep volcanoes. So volcano mulching is when a tree trunk gets usually like wood chip mulch, some kind of mulch, but just like packed up like a triangle, like a volcano. And it's not good for multiple reasons, because it can make that trunk matter rot, because that trunk matter typically isn't really made to be so moist and have mulch piled around it. And it can, like, the bugs and grubs and beetles and stuff sometimes like to live in that mulch and chew on the tree trunk down there. And also on the root zone, it's not good to have such deep mulch on top of the root zone, because the roots need a little bit of access to oxygen too, so I'm told. So when I was walking around the campus of my nephew's college and place of employment, I noticed this, and I thought, huh, I got some time to kill. Maybe I can do something good with my life, and maybe I can work on this issue. So I pulled the mulch away a little bit from a tree or two of the, I don't know, few hundred trees that were there. And I thought, maybe, you know, I got time. Let me just go see if I can talk to the people in charge of landscaping. So I asked around. I went here, I went there, went in this door, went in that door. And in one of the administrative offices, the receptionist gave me the direct phone number to the man in charge of landscaping. And I think I may have called it, or I may have thought, this isn't really a phone conversation I'm prepared to have. So instead, I was like, do you have some paper I can borrow? I think I'll leave a note. And she said, okay. Maybe I had my own paper and pen. I don't even remember. So then I went into the class, into the, one of the buildings, and I sat and I wrote this note front and back. I looked on my phone and found a nice website from some ag agency or extension service talking about the points I was trying to make about volcano mulching. And I linked to that in the letter. And then I gave it. And like half an hour later, I gave it to the receptionist and went on my way to cash my ride to Knoxville. And that was last fall. And I hadn't been back since a few days ago, day before yesterday, Wednesday, when I got the ride with my nephew to work. And I was walking through campus with him. And I said, hey, Johannan, look at these trees. Do you remember when I was here last year? I don't know if you remember all the volcano mulching. And he was like, huh? Whoa, what's that? I said, but look, it's gone. They've removed it. You can see the high water marks where a lot of it was like 12, 14 inches up on the trees. But look, one after another, like wow, it looks like they shifted their practices. Huh, who knew? Well, maybe a letter had an effect after all. It was a happy moment. All right, next after that, then I got my ride to Knoxville in time to go to the Women in Black Vigil in Market Square in downtown Knoxville. And I have a little interview with someone from there on my phone. I have the same issue with my phone and my clips that I did last time, for the last couple times I've done out there, which is that I no longer am able to move data from my phone to Audacity to my thumb drives for editing. So what I have is raw clips. All right. So I'm not sure where exactly this starts. Right, what's your name?
Leslie Matthews.
And where are we at right now?
We're at the Women in Black Vigil on Wednesday, May 6th?
I think today's the 6th.
Yeah, 2026.
Yeah. How long have you been, how long have you been coming to this vigil?
I would say 2 years now.
And how did you get involved with it?
I had retired and I was in a situation with my son who was kind of stuck in China.
And you want to tell that story? That's kind of crazy.
He was teaching and he got drugged in a bar and arrested and they took his passport and... You know, it was hard. So he was stuck there for 2 years and then spent 6 months in prison. So during that time, I kind of went a little cray-cray and retired from my job as a nurse practitioner. I was working in Baltimore. And I was bouncing around. And my daughter lived here in Maryville. And she was next door to Brenda Bell, who is how I got involved with the Women in Black. Brenda Bell is very famous around here as
an activist.
She's an activist.
Okay. What'd you say before that with your daughter and Brenda Bell?
She was next door.
Oh, they were next door neighbors. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so that's how, and Brenda really helped me through my difficult time with my son.
Uh-huh.
He's back now. He's fine. He's married. He's brought his Chinese girlfriend over and they bought a house. So they're fine. They're doing well. But it was a hard 2.5 years and I had to retire. So now I'm like trying to figure out retirement. And then my daughter went through a divorce, so I bought a house real quick in Alcoa. And this is, now that I'm retired, I need stuff to do. This feels right.
Yeah. Are we gonna ask you? I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the situation with your son. How did things play out? Can you say any more about that?
Well, he had been a, I don't know.
Why did they arrest him?
He got drugged in a bar, and instead of going to sleep, he had a paradoxical reaction to the Rohypnol, and he kind of went out of his head. He doesn't remember any of it, but he woke up in a jail cell in Shanghai.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to talk about.
Yeah. Okay, it sounds really intense.
So he was, 2 years when I just didn't know if I'd ever see him again.
Yeah, sounds heart-wrenching.
And it was during the pandemic, and I was trying to keep my job as an oncology nurse practitioner, and it was hard. It was just a hard time.
It sounds like you've experienced some of, just think about like Palestinians and
exactly.
Israeli prisons and all this kind of thing.
It's like it's the microcosm of everything that's wrong kind of in the world.
Yeah. You know?
Is how I feel about Palestine.
Yes. So. All kinds of other things. Are you passionate about?
All right. I'm going to go to the next clip. And so that was Knoxville. What else did I do in Knoxville? Oh, here's another clip. This is out of chronological order. But this clip, speaking of out of chronological order, it's fun to drive. It's fun drive. Spring fun drive at Valley Free Radio. And we pay our meager rent and electric bills and repair our studio equipment with donations and support from the community. super grateful for the community support that we get. Thanks to people that everyone that donates, a little money goes long ways here because we're not really paying for labor costs. And you can donate in this very moment if you're near an electronic device and you know your financial information. In this very moment, you can go pluck your financial information. I don't know how other people do it. I carry my card, like my debit card, ATM card, and I'm not going to tell people where I carry my card, but I carry it somewhere. And then when I got to buy a bus ticket, then I go, I get that card, and you know, I dial it in. Well, you can do that. But instead of paying Greyhound, you can pay valleyfreeradio.org, valleyfreeradio.org, and we'll pay our bills, and we'll be happy about it. And what other motivators? Valley Free Radio, it's just a great community resource where we get information and stories and out there from the syndicated shows like Democracy Now! To the local ones like Out There Somewhere. valleyfreeradio.org/donate. I'm sure if you go to valleyfreeradio.org, you can figure out how to donate. I don't need to say /donate. Or mail checks to 140 Pine Street, Florence, Massachusetts, 01062. Or give me cash. Ruthie Woodring. You can write my name on it. No, write Valley Free Radio on it. All right. Thanks. Think about making that little donation. You know what I have regretted in my life more than I have not regretted is I have regretted not being generous on occasion. And that'll bring me to my next story, kind of sort of related. So after I left Knoxville on the bus Wednesday night. By Thursday morning, had arrived by Thursday at 11:30 a.m., like 13 hours later, I'd arrived in Baltimore. It was a long, windy trip, let me tell you, because from Roanoke, Virginia, to Fredericksburg, Virginia, the bus wasn't even on interstates. It was on these back roads, back roads, lots of stop and go, and the driver was not my favorite driver. I might play a clip from that too, I'm not sure. We made it to DC, we made it to Baltimore, and it was, so I'd been on the bus for like 11 and a half hours and had another 12 hours before I would arrive in Springfield. But I had 3 hours in Baltimore and I had my little kick scooter. So I kick scooted around. It was nice to explore. I have a clip from Baltimore. But when I got back to the bus station, I was like, okay, let me fill up my water bottles, use the bathroom, wash my hands, brush my teeth because I'd eaten some sweet things. But the bathrooms and the Greyhound station and in Baltimore, which is a kind of a hub, somewhat of a hub, the bathrooms were out of commission. They said there were sewage issues and the water fountains weren't working either. The water fountains just had brown stuff in the bottom. And I had my two empty water bottles and I was like, I just want some water because I'd been scootering around for the previous couple hours. And so then I saw a guy emptying the trash barrels. I'm like, I'm sure there's a maintenance sink around here somewhere, utility sink or something around here somewhere. And I'm sure the employees have somewhere where they use the bathroom. So I was like, I asked him, hey, any chance you could fill these water bottles for me? And he said, sure, do you want ice? And I was like, no, just water, just like from the sink or whatever, it's totally fine. And he said, okay. So he took them and walked like 20 yards down and he disappeared. And my bus was getting ready to board. I was getting a little antsy. And then I was keeping an eye out for him. Then he came back. He had a little black plastic bag in his hand with my two water bottles and another bottle that was a solid ice thing that he must have gotten out of like the staff fridge or something. And so he gave me the bag. There was a straw in it also. And he hadn't handed me the bag. And it was so nice of him. I didn't really want ice. I didn't need ice or a straw, but the fact that he'd gone out of his way and just, it was very sweet. And I was like, hey, do you take it? Can I give you a tip? And he said, sure. And the smallest bill I had was a 10. So otherwise, I would have given him like a 1 or a 5. And I was like, so I gave him the 10. And then I thought about how one day when I was, and I said, I'm a trash hauler too. And I remembered about how one day I was emptying Northampton downtown trash barrels as part of Pedal People. And I was emptying the barrel in front of Fitzwillie's. And this man walking into Fitzwillie's asked me something about, like, do you get paid well? Do you enjoy your job? I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And he was like, well, here, have this. And he handed me $100 bill. Yep. I'll not forget that. What else I have to say about Baltimore and my time in Baltimore yesterday? Let me come up. I have a clip here. Okay, let me make sure I got all the sliders up. This is from Baltimore.
That's really quick.
Okay. Oh, yes. So I'm in Baltimore on a bus layover and walking around behind the bus station. I was looking for green space, and there's a big green space back here with lots of people, like, planting trees or something. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Heather Caprio. We actually work for Grow Home.
Uh-huh.
It's a nonprofit organization based in Brooklyn, which is Baltimore City, Maryland.
Okay.
We're a workforce development program, and we focus around a lot of green and environmental.
So this project here, what's it, this little area called? What's, can you tell a little bit about the history of it? What's going on here?
So we call it the Ridgely Cove site. It's behind the Horseshoe Casino. Back in 2017 or 18, they did a large tree planting job here. But unfortunately, a lot of the trees didn't survive. So it was 114 total that didn't. So we got the job with Baltimore City Rec and Parks to come in, replaced 114 trees and added more. So we did 180 total.
You were saying a minute ago that the soil, like the ground here, can you talk about the ground conditions here?
So they're not the greatest. it's pretty rocky, a lot of backfill and stuff. So throughout the years, with soil testing and just the previous failure of some of the trees to thrive, we kind of figured out how we would do it this time. So breaking ground, it was pretty hard on the crew. A lot of times they use an auger, but most of the time it was just shovel and a lot of work. And then we got the trees in, and we used some Leaf Grow, which is a soil conditioner, to mix in with the soil to try to give it a little bit of extra nutrients. And then we put mulch on it to hold the moisture. We have stakes and caging around it because there's a lot of deer activity around here.
That says wondering deer. Is yes. Like deer? It seems like kind of a peninsula kind of thing. But
a lot of deer, a lot of turtles, foxes. Since we've been here, we've had a few turtles actually laying eggs in some of the holes.
Oh, wow.
So we're trying to give them, the trees, the best protection that we can. And then we're going to have some type of watering schedule or water maintenance, possible irrigation, to try to give them the best chance that we can.
You were saying that the, like, if you go down a few feet, then there's a barrier?
Yeah, so below, I believe it's 20 to 24 inches down below that, there was some contamination in the soil. So they put a barrier down, and then that's when they did all the fill on top. So that way it just kind of keeps it separated. And so it doesn't affect the new trees.
So these trees are just, they're just growing in the top 24 inches of soil.
Yeah, so when they do the site plan, they figure out what trees they think are going to thrive best here, how big they grow, the root systems, how the root systems grow. So it's a lot of behind the scenes work that I unfortunately don't get the pleasure to do just yet.
Probably not a lot of, like, I don't know, like nut trees with tap roots.
Yeah. I think they avoided the tap roots.
Okay.
We do have eastern red buds. So we have the eastern red buds. We have white willows, eastern red cedars, several different oaks. So we got a pretty big variety.
Okay. Can you give an idea, like, how big is the space that you're working, we're at right now?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Like, I don't know, like an acre or two? A couple acres?
Yeah, definitely a couple acres.
Okay.
Yeah, because the trees go from on the other side of the fence there to the other side there, and from the bank actually all the way down the hill next to the garage.
Okay.
So it's several hundred for sure.
Trees.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm sliding this, I got to jump ahead to that clip since, like I said, it's unedited. and get to minute get to 5:40. And while I'm trying to set up this next clip, you could be donating to Valley Free Radio, valleyfreeradio.org. Thanks. All right, back to Heather.
Hire people throughout the area, Ballmer City, and we basically employ them to where they have jobs and they get paid while we help them break barriers. Yeah. So if they need a license or they say they have a record that they used to when they were younger or even older and they want to get expunged to get better jobs.
Yeah.
Housing, if they need, say, daycare is their barrier. Yeah. We try to break any barrier to help them to become employable at another full-time job because we're only part-time for them. And then we help them move on to other jobs.
How does funding for Grow Home work?
So it is a lot of funding from people. So we have a few partners that do funding. We get grants, apply for grants. Some are just that we apply for. Some it's where multiple hubs have applied together. But yeah, it's all, and it's sometimes scary too.
A hustle.
Because you don't know.
Yeah.
Luckily, we've been pretty steady.
Yeah.
But I remember like a year or so ago, it was a little scary.
Yeah.
You know, you never know if the money's going to be there, if it's going to get approved. And grants have always scared me.
Yeah.
I've always heard like even certain words, if it's not right, they'll kick back. And I'm like, oh no, that would be horrible.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was Heather from Grow Home in Baltimore doing tree planting. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Oh, after I left that area in Baltimore and I was scootering along, I was going in this kind of construction industrial area under Interstate where the road was kind of closed, but there are still some construction workers going through. And crossing the road was a maybe 3 or 4 foot long black snake, but it had stopped in the middle of the road and I was the only vehicle with me and my scooter in sight. And I was like, go, scoot. And I tried to wave my arms. I like pushed it on the tail, but all it did was turn around and be like, you poke me again and I'll bite you. And so then I was like, well, let me go get a stick. And I went over into the bushes to get a stick. And when I was no longer in a threatening position, then it decided to keep on going across the street. And then there was a pedestrian coming on the sidewalk and the snake was just, it was sticking its head up, just about to go across the sidewalk to get to the grass. And the pedestrian was coming and he was, I think he had headphones in and sunglasses on. And I said, hey, don't be startled by the black snake here. And he didn't, I was across the street and he didn't acknowledge that he had heard me. And I was like, hey, don't be startled by the snake here. And he didn't respond. And he walked past, like the snake had his head up on the edge of the curb and he walked right past like a foot or two away and didn't made no indication that he even noticed it. Well, that was good. I just didn't want the snake to be get. I didn't want anyone to freak out and think they had to kill the snake or something. All right. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. And I'm your host, Ruthie. I have a request to play. This is for all the people who've lost their companions, human and dog. It's Irma Thomas with Ruler of My Heart from 1963.
Ruler of my heart, robber of my soul, where can you be? I wait patiently. My heart cries out from pain inside. Where can you be? I wait patiently. When you're alone, the going gets rough. Come back, come back, come back.
I've had enough. Make me a queen. Happy again. Hear my cry. Please, my king.
Listening to Out There today on Valley Free Radio. Out There airs Fridays from 4 until 5 p.m. And you can hear archived editions online at weatherbeard.com/out there. Out There Archive. weatherbeard.com/out there archive. If you don't type in the archive part, then you won't hear the updated editions. Kind of like if you go to valleyfreeradio.org and you don't hit that donate button, we won't get any money. Yes, fund drive, spring fund drive. We have a spring fund drive and we have a fall fund drive. And those two fund drives together net us some money that we use to pay the electric, the rent, getting the syndicated shows like Democracy Now!, which comes on at 5 o'clock. That's in five and a half minutes on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM. Streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. If you haven't taken the chance to go online, Valley Free Radio, your contribution is excitedly accepted today, now. And we'll use it. Believe me, we will use it. We appreciate them greatly, and every little bit goes a long ways. And what else? It's just a cool community resource. Anyone can have a show. Anyone who submits an application wants to be part of this, the Valley Free Radio closer community or farther community. When I say the closer community, I'm including Valley Free Radio volunteers who don't even have a show. They just volunteer because they want to support this community. And also the community of listeners, which I'm very grateful for. ValleyFreeRadio.org. Donate. Thanks again. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5, as I said. Other announcements I'd like to make this week, Monday, May 11th through Sunday, May 17th, is Northampton Bike Week. But even before Monday, May 11th, we have Saturday, May 9th. That's tomorrow. Conflicting things going on tomorrow, Saturday, May 9th from 10 to 12, 10 a.m. to noon. These are only two of the conflicting things that I'm going to announce. One is the Great Tree Ride. Starts at the Roundhouse parking lot in downtown Northampton. We'll ride 5 paved miles through Northampton at around a 5-mile-per-hour pace, stopping several times to look at the coolest trees. We'll end the ride right back where we started, with snacks. Well, if the ride's from 10 to noon, that means there must be going to be snacks a little bit before noon behind the Roundhouse parking lot. No, go see the trees too. I'm sure you can see the elm tree in front of Northampton Market. That's a pretty awesome tree. And one of my favorite trees that hasn't made it to the Great Tree Tour yet is the one by the skate park that it's where you turn down from the rail trail and off of West Street to turn into the skate park, the Veterans Park, Squeaky Peters Field. It's that catalpa. It's that catalpa that at some point in its life it sort of fell over and then it rerooted. So it's got a trunk that's sort of horizontal and looks like the Loch Ness Monster and is fun to sit on and hang out on with your friends. Anyway, the great tree ride, all are welcome at this inclusive social ride. More info and sign up at bit.ly/trees-ride. Or you can go to look up Northampton Bike Week. I just did a web search on Northampton Bike Week, and all these events came up. This ride is hosted by All Bodies on Bikes Western Mass and Friends of Northampton Trails. Also, Saturday, May 9th, tomorrow, 10 a.m. to noon, is a free bike repair event at Forbes Library, hosted by Bikes for All. Bring your bike for simple maintenance and repairs. Saturday, May 9th, 10 to noon at Forbes Library. In the yard of Forbes. I'll be at the bike lab tomorrow from 2 until 3 also, Saturday, May 9th. What else is going on as part of Bike Week? A bike tour of conservation properties in Ward 3 on Tuesday, May 12th. Tuesday, May 12th, 5:30 in the evening, Terrace Trails. Starting at the Terrace Trails behind the College Church and the Cutchins programs, that's off of Pomeroy Terrace, we'll ride 3.5 miles at a conversational pace to the Connecticut River Greenway, stopping along the way at the Montview Conservation Area, the Jail Farm, and Sheldon Field, and then return along the same way. At each stop, we'll share a bit about the property's history and current status. This ride's hosted by the Meadow City Conservation Coalition. Also, as part of Bike Week Northampton, Bike Week Breakfast, the annual bike breakfast, Wednesday, May 13th, this coming Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. Celebrate Bike to Work Week at our community bike breakfast. Enjoy free refreshments with your new and old friends while browsing the tables of area cycling groups. A short speaker program and the city's proclamation of Bike to Work Week are just some of the highlights. What else? A leisurely intergenerational ride to Look Park on Wednesday, May 13th, same Wednesday. You can have your breakfast. And then at 11 a.m., starting at Northampton Senior Center, is a ride down Fruit Street to Old South to the bike path or the rail trail, the multi-use path. This is Bike Week. We'll call it the bike path. Along the path to Look Park, we'll ride at a conversational pace, 4.5 miles to Look Park, where we'll stop for lunch. Bring your own. And then ride back to the Senior Center. This ride is led by Mac Everett, Jeff Leshen, Barbara Smith, and Howard Moore. Join us. Oh, shoot.
Valley, spin it on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM, WXOJLP, Northampton. Say word.